This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
All right, well, I'm not exactly Tony Perkins today. Sandy Rios filling in for Tony. I'm the Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association. I also host the morning show. I do the morning and Tony does the evening. And, of course, we cover the same things. It's like an absolute flood, the news. Every day is just about more than one person can handle. And certainly the men that serve us and women on Capitol Hill are feeling the brunt of this because we talk about it, we cover it, but they actually bear the burden of having to do something about it. Let me just say that the big news of the day is that the Senate this morning, released their version of the health care plan. There are three senators who have expressed tremendous concern, Senators Cruz, Johnson, Lee, and of course, Dr. Rand Paul. Dr. Paul says that it's worse than Obamacare, and in fact, in many ways, it's just unsuitable, does not repeal, and replaces with something that seems to even be more sweeping. But of course, the threat to those that refuse to embrace this, both by the president and the pressure from the press, is tremendous. Probably no one knows this better than my next guest. It's Congressman Jim Jordan from Ohio, one of the key leaders in the House of Representatives, a hero for many of us in many ways, and he joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Congressman Jordan.
Good afternoon, Sandy. Good to be with you.
Thank you. It's good to have a chance to talk to you. I'm just thinking that you must be watching the release of this with just a little bit of dread.
Well, I mean, let's never forget the facts. The bill that we sent out of the House, while we conservatives thought it was the best bill we were going to get out of the House of Representatives, was not a full repeal. I mean, I'm always honest with the voters and with the folks back home I get the privilege of serving. Not a full repeal, but it's the best we were going to get. Our focus became, let's see what we can do to lower premiums so that middle class and working class families don't have to pay these exorbitant costs for their insurance that they currently pay. And that still remains our focus. If what can come back from the Senate will lower premiums, and if it keeps in the pro-life protections, namely this organization, Planned Parenthood, should not be getting your tax dollars, anyone's tax dollars. If it does that, then we'll see. But that's still the focus for those of us in the Freedom Caucus and those of us who are conservatives in the House.
Well, the bill's just, you know, it's just barely been out, and it is so complex. I find myself wondering, you know, if the men and women who serve in Congress are really equipped. When I read the details of this, my brain feels like it's scrambling. You're trying to figure out things that are so complex. It's almost, you all have different gifts. You come to the Congress with different areas of expertise, but certainly not all of you can handle the details of rewriting health care.
Yeah, it sort of emphasizes what we wanted to do right from the start. When we started this congressional session, shortly after President Trump was his inauguration, we wanted it to be two bills. One was a repeal, clean repeal Obamacare, which is what we told the voters we're going to do. Separate bill would be a replacement bill that would put in the kind of things that were patient-centered, family-centered, doctor-centered, the kind of across state lines purchasing, the kind of things that we know will help with health care costs. That's how we should have handled this, but when it got sort of a mishmash of things thrown together in one piece of legislation, some repeal, some replace, some that's when it got so complicated and frankly not consistent with what we told the American people were going to do. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, within that context, we said we're going to make the bill better in the House. We know as conservatives we did. We got the work requirements in there for some of the able-bodied folks in the Medicaid expansion population. We were able to get this high-risk pool, which protects against families who have a pre-existing condition in their families, and this choice amendment, which would allow states to opt out of some of the most onerous regulations that drive up costs, opt out of those, and a good amendment that was put in at the last that got much of our support. So we made it better, but now we'll see again what comes back from the Senate.
Right, and to be clear, now the Senate has to get, they cannot lose more than two senators and pass it. It's going to be passed on reconciliation. They have to have 51 votes. Vice President Pence might have to be called in. The vote is hopefully expected from, at least hopefully by Senator McConnell's description, by the first part of next week, and then it comes back to you in the House. And just a few more questions. In the House, do you really think any Democrats, whatever version it comes back in from the Senate, do you think any Democrats will support it?
No. No, it's unfortunate, but I don't think so. Even though even though we saw what happened in Ohio, my home state, just a couple weeks ago, Anthem pulled out. There's only one carrier left in many of the counties in our state, even though people's premiums have skyrocketed, and if they can afford the premiums, they can't afford the deductible, even though everything we were told about Obamacare when it was initially passed 7 years ago, that, you know, like your plan, keep your plan, like your doctor, keep your doctor, premiums will decline. They'll decline on average $2,500. Deductibles will go down. We were told the website would work. We were told the website was secure. We were told these co-ops that were formed were going to be wonderful. Everything we were told turned out to be false. And we know that they misled us because Jonathan Gruber, the guy the New York Times called the architect of Obamacare, went on television after it had passed and told us, yeah, we lied to the American people. Yeah, we took them as simpletons, and we passed this thing. Misled the American people. People in government did that. So we know how bad it is, but in spite of all that, the Democrats aren't going to help us, in my judgment, which is unfortunate.
All right, so then that means that it's going to fall on the Freedom Caucus. Yet, once again, you know, the pressure is going to come upon you guys. And so I want us to talk about something else very important, but I want to ask you one last question.
Sure.
Because there's going to be a lot of discussion about this health care bill in the next few days in much more detail than you and I are doing. But how can we help, honestly? How can we help?
Well, I think it, you know, I always say we make this job way too complicated. The job of a member of Congress is to do what he said he would do when the voters gave us the privilege to serve. And we told them that we were going to accomplish certain things. So let's that's why we got to get a bill done in the end. Let's focus on that. Let's focus on the tax reform we got to do, on building the wall, on standing up for fundamental liberties and values, and for getting rid of Obamacare. Let's do those things. So you just continue to educate your listeners and your supporters on those kind of key things. Just encourage them to remind their elected representative, do what you told me you were going to do.
Yeah.
Do what you said you were going to do when I gave you the privilege to go serve and represent our family.
Well, I have to say that the listeners to AFR Talk, they really appreciate what the Freedom Caucus has done, Congressman, and they pray and they work and they do everything they can, and I know they will continue to watch this and do what they can to help. All right, another issue that you have come out on, which I'm very grateful for. You and Congressman Meadows and Congressman Jody Heiss wrote an editorial in Fox News today.
Yeah.
And you're talking about to me, I'm not sure what word to use, the huge travesty of having Bob Mueller appointed a special counsel, and before that, the misdeeds of former FBI Director James Comey. And you point out that a special counsel was never appointed under Obama for all the things that happened, and yet for this, they rushed to that. You fill in the blanks.
Sandy couldn't do it for the IRS, even though the lead investigative agent was an individual, Barbara Bosserman, who was a Maxwell contributor to Obama's campaign. Couldn't do a special counsel, even though the House of Representatives passed a resolution asking for a special counsel. Couldn't do it, even though the IRS targeted people's most fundamental liberties, their right to speak out on political matters and not be harassed for doing so. Even though all that happened, couldn't do a special counsel there. Couldn't do one last year when numerous people called for a special counsel in the Clinton email investigation. Couldn't do it, even though Loretta Lynch met with the former President Clinton just days before Secretary Clinton was interviewed by the FBI. Couldn't do it there. But when it comes to James Comey's reputation, when it comes to someone in the Justice Department, we got to have a special counsel. Really? So that's what's so frustrating. And this unequal treatment under the law is not supposed to be how it operates in this great country.
You know what? I want to go back and underscore something you just said, because honestly, I did not know this. I thought I knew a lot, but I didn't know this. You mentioned this. I'm going to repeat it. Barbara Bosserman, a max-out contributor to President Obama's reelection campaign, was the lead investigator assigned by FBI Director Comey and Attorney General Eric Holder to investigate the IRS.
Yeah.
So that it never came to anything. And you...
But history repeats itself, because look at the people that Mr. Mueller has handpicked for his team to investigate President Trump in this whole Russian investigation. You got James Quarles, who's a big Democrat contributor. You got Jeannie Rhee, who's a big Democrat contributor and was a Clinton worked for the Clinton Foundation as a lawyer and represented Ms. Clinton personally. I mean, you got a whole host of people who have deep Democrat ties, deep Democrat support for Democrat candidates for president. That's the team here. So. Maybe it'll be I guess par for the course now.
I knew there were lots, but now a dozen different attorneys, all of them partisan. You mentioned Elizabeth Preloger, a former law clerk for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Elena Kagan, also part of his team. You know, many of us know about Bob Mueller's past. My husband is a former FBI agent, a congressman, so I know a little bit about it. And many of us were appalled at his appointment because we know what he's done. You know, it was under Mueller that the SPLC became the go-to place to find out who the hate groups were, like American Family Association, like the Family Research Council. That was under Bob Mueller, the FBI director, among other things that you could fill in the blanks for. And so I have wondered, I know that you can, I should ask what, you are proposing something. You guys are trying to make something happen in the House. Explain that.
We want hearings. The House Judiciary Committee is the committee uniquely responsible for oversight of the Justice Department and fundamentally looking at when and enforcing this idea that there should be equal and recognize that this should be equal treatment under the law. So, look, remember what Mr. Comey said 2 weeks ago when he testified. He said that at the direction of Attorney General Lynch, he was told to refer to the Clinton investigation as a matter, not an investigation. He actually questioned at the time. He says, really? Why would we do that? Everyone knows it's an investigation, but he was told to do it. He went out and did it. He misled the American people, calling it a matter, not an investigation. He did it willfully. He did it intentionally. He did it at the direction of the Attorney General. This year, he misleads the American people again when he allows the perception to continue that President Trump is under investigation when, in fact, he isn't, and had specifically been told three times by Mr. Comey that the president wasn't under investigation. But he furthers that perception. So twice he misled the American people. He then gets fired, and what does he do? He leaks information through a friend to the New York Times, government memo to the New York Times, and he does it for the stated purpose, he said this in his testimony, for the stated purpose of creating momentum in the public for a special counsel to be appointed. And of course, not just any special counsel will do. It has to be his good friend, his mentor, and his predecessor, Bob Mueller. You couldn't do this. It's like a movie, right?
It is.
You
it is like
this is unbelievable.
No one could write a plot this bizarre. And so, given that it's you and Mark Meadows and Jody Heiss, can you make this happen? This hearing? Or do you have to have permission?
We're pushing the Judiciary Chairman and our leadership to start an investigation and hearings. And as we've said in our piece, it's time to investigate the investigators. So that's what we're calling for, and we hope it happens sooner rather than later.
All right, we only have a minute left. I just have one question. It's not an easy one, but it's important. The shooting only happened a week ago. I mean, is it amazing that, you know, it was an attempted assassination on your colleagues? One of them has nearly died, although he's doing well now. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, Congressman, we saw members of the House kneeling in prayer last week. On the baseball diamond, that was heartening to me. But do you think that tragedy had any effect on the relationships in Congress?
I do. And you know, look, everyone's been praying for Steve and the others who were injured. And we're so thankful for what the Capitol Hill police officers, those two individuals, were just amazing and amazing heroic actions they took. But I think it's positive, and let's hope so. My attitude has always been let's try to work together to do what's best for the country, and let's hope that we get more of that as we move forward. But the main thing is let's hope everyone heals up. In particular, Congressman Scalise is a good man,
yes,
and has a great family.
Yes. Well, I always think with God, all things are possible. I do know that verse. I just can't say it. Congressman Jordan, you're a champion. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be with you, Sandy. Take care.
All right. Sandy Rios on Washington Watch back right after this.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrades, Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at RyanSecretAgent.com.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters. Hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to be going back to Israel in March, March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love to have you come with us. You know, one of my favorite places to go in Jerusalem is Gordon's Calvary, which is the place where they make the case, a very strong case, was where Jesus was executed. Then we'll also see the Garden Tomb, which is right next door to that, where also a very strong case can be made, was the tomb where Jesus was buried and where he rose from the dead. Well, that's just two of the places we'll see on one day in Jerusalem. We'd love to have you come with us. If you want the information we have available on the tour, go to the website twholyland.com, twholyland.com. For a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, 800-FAMILIES, option 5.
Tony Perkins and Washington Watch. The verse is, with God, with man it is impossible, but with God all things are possible. You know the verse. I'm sure most of you know that verse. And I think it's important to realize that when things get so tangled, and they certainly are tangled now. I seem to remember that when the election was coming on, I believe that people around the country got really serious. Not about politics, yes, about politics as a byproduct of being on their knees in prayer and getting serious about their commitment and what that commitment meant to their responsibility as a citizen, to their children, to their grandchildren, to their future of their country. And I think that men prayed, and I think God heard. And I have to say that God has not gone silent. God is still listening. And as much of a mess as we see things in, with man, it is impossible. Look at us. What a mess we are. I was thinking today about how Jesus looked around him at one point and said, how long must I bear with you? Because the nature of man is so depraved and sinful and feckless and selfish and just you fill in the blanks. And, you know, Jesus had to endure. And those of us that want righteousness to prevail must endure the unrighteousness not only of others, but of ourselves, no less. And so with man, it really is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. I mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center in the last, kind of briefly with Congressman Jordan, and I mentioned that under FBI Director Comey, the SPLC was used as the go-to group to help the FBI decide who were hate groups. The Pentagon did the same thing. I remember very well the American Family Association being singled out in training to military personnel and having those, we had it reported to us that soldiers were being threatened that they should not be giving to us or listening or reading our information because we were a hate group. And of course, you know that Floyd Corkins went into the lobby of the Family Research Council with the idea of a mass murder, burying Chick-fil-A sandwiches he was going to stuff in the mouths of his victims. And Floyd Corkins, of course, was a person who watched what the SPLC said, read their hate map, followed the trail to the Family Research Council, that horrible hate group. No one in Washington, D.C. believes for a minute that FRC is a hate group or that the American Family Association is a hate group. And yet 46 conservative groups have been listed now by another organization called GuideStar as hate groups. Now, why is that important? That's because GuideStar is like the premier source of information on charities in the United States. So so let's say you are thinking about donating. Most of you know about FRC, so you know what they do, and you donate to them. By the way, it's FRC.org in case you want to do that, or AFA.com if you want to, AFA.org if you want to, AFA.net if you want to donate to AFA. You know how to do that, and you know who we are. But if, let's say, you wanted to give your money to a certain type of organization, you were some sort of a corporate entity or someone with more money to give and weren't so familiar with the individual personalities and work of a certain group, this is where you would go. You would go to GuideStar to figure out and kind of assess what groups are worthy of your gifts. GuideStar has been, you know, the North Star for charities. It has been reputable. But now it is labeled many, many groups. They have been citing the SPLC and using that list to now say that organizations like Family Research Council and the American Family Association are indeed hate groups. So you can imagine the devastating effect on charities like ours. It's interesting. If you trace the financial roots of other organizations on the left, they somehow magically figure out how to use tax dollars to fund their most nefarious things. They all do it. They're masters at it, whether it's grants or tax dollars. They manage to write things out, and trust me, the left is fueled by your tax dollars. Ask Planned Parenthood how much money they receive, and that's just one example. There are many. Doesn't happen with Family Research Council and the American Family Association and other groups. It doesn't happen that way. We depend on individual donors. Now, please hear me when I say I think that's great. When I was president of Concerned Women for America, it was that was when the Bush administration was discussing trying to free up tax dollars to give to nonprofit organizations that were religious in nature. I was one of the lone voices at the time that said, no, I don't think so. I don't think we want tax dollars. No, we don't, because we don't want the strings attached. We don't want our decisions being made based on what they will and will not let us do. We do not want to be strapped to those dollars so that we are afraid to lose them and we make decisions that are not in accord with the mission. And the mission that we have is one of serving God and all of His Word and all of His principles. No room for compromise. No, just don't give any wiggle room for any question about where we stand, and we need to maintain our freedom to fight for the things that are right. So that's what the Christian organizations have done. They have not been taking tax dollars. Some of them that have gone south. I could name names, but I won't in this minute. I've seen what I had feared actually happen. And so I think it's a good thing, but that means that people like you, donors to FRC, donors to AFA, you're it when it comes to support, except for some major donors who are generous. And, you know, there are not many on our side. Most of them are on the left. Except for that, you know, we depend on your dollars. And that's why if you have an organization like GuideStar listing AFA or FRC as a hate organization based on the Southern Poverty Law Center, it's a serious problem. And so with that, a letter has been written to the GuideStar organization demanding, really, imploring them to stop using the SPLC as their go-to or their arbiter for who should be given money and who shouldn't. And so that's what the focus of our discussion is going to be for the next few minutes. Mark Kerkorian is going to join me. He is the executive director for the Center for Immigration Studies, and they've recently now been added to this group of hate groups and listed on GuideStar as a hate group. It's really onerous. It really and truly is, and so we have to do something to correct it. So I hope you'll stay tuned. We'll talk to Mark next and find out more about what we can do and how we should respond. This is Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. We'll be right back.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, here we go, another week where the markets seem to just kind of ignore the lack of progress that we are seeing in Washington, D.C. No fiscal policies, no real economic plans or agendas, and a pro-growth agenda that is being pushed through any kind of legislative debate or process. As a matter of fact, we continue to see records most of this week, and even the NASDAQ itself, the technology stocks, pushing higher into record territory. It really is amazing when we consider what the markets represent. See, the markets represent a good six-month look, a six-month projection, I should say, into what we might be expecting in the economy. But I gotta believe that if the markets are doing this well as a projection of a pro-growth agenda, then one has to believe that we've got to see something actually happening with that pro-growth agenda. Yes, we are getting some real economic growth based on some assumptions that it's coming and based on the enthusiasm that comes into the private sector because of a reduction in regulatory burden and the notion that surely tax reform is coming. Optimism is a good thing and will continue to help the markets flourish as long as we don't see the process continuing to stall.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Sandy Rios back with you, filling in for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch. Let me just say that Tony on the Twitter is at T Perkins, at T Perkins, or you can go to frc.org to find out more information. Great information that Family Research Council puts out all the time. By the way, my Facebook page is Sandy Rios in the morning. Would love to have you join me in the mornings at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Joining me next is Mark Kakorian. Mark is the Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark also found himself on the list of hate groups as designated by the SPLC. And for some of us, it's like business as usual. The AFA and FRC, we're kind of used to it. I've been listed on a list of women against Islam with our pictures placed, our etchings of our faces and our geographical location, which, trust me, is very dangerous. We are listed as people who hate Islam. And so the SPLC itself, from my perspective, is indeed a hate group and is creating a tremendous amount of danger and financial risk for those of us that are family organizations. And now they have designated the SPLC is now being used as the go-to organization for GuideStar USA to determine which of us are worthy of your donations. Mark, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So I've talked about this a little bit before you've joined us, but let me ask you this. How key is GuideStar from your perspective to donations to nonprofit groups like ours, conservative groups?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is. GuideStar has always been the main clearinghouse for information about all nonprofits, and it's always been very kind of even-handed. I don't even know if even-handed is the right word, because it's never been even involved in any kind of political judgments. The main point of it was to have a go-to place for all the tax return information, which is publicly available, but otherwise, without GuideStar, you'd have to literally, you know, drive to somebody's office in some other city in the country and get their tax information, which is publicly available. But how useful is that if they're in Chicago and you're in Washington? Well, GuideStar has always performed this very useful service to have all that stuff there. And they've never been involved in any way in political issues. And this really was disturbing that they now have tied themselves to the SPLC's crusade to completely destroy, those are the words of the SPLC itself, quote, completely destroy, unquote, any organization that they have put on their hit list, because it's not a hate group list, it's a hit list, both in the sense of destroying the organization, but let's face it, after the Family Research Council shooting, after the riot at Middlebury College when Charles Murray was speaking, after the poisoning, literally the poisoning in Iceland of Robert Spencer, who is a who does Jihad Watch. He's an anti-Sharia activist. All of those people, all of those things were the result of the SPLC's work. So, you know, it is very disturbing that a otherwise or that a formally neutral group like GuideStar is buying into and signing up for the SPLC's hit list.
And Mark, to add one more, just last week, James Hodgkinson, this shooter at the of Steve Scalise and the Republicans that they were practicing the attempted assassination, really, of many of the Freedom Caucus. He had the SPLC hate map as well, and was a follower of the SPLC. So here we come back to this. So now we're learning more about what might be behind this, and it sounds to me like it is the I don't know how new he is, but the leader. I don't know if he's the CEO, is Jacob Harold. And I have a picture of him in front of me here holding a big sign at the Women's March in D.C. What have we learned about him?
Well, I mean, we met with him, actually, last week. We wrote them a nasty lawyer letter about this, and they said, well, you know, we'd be happy to meet with you. And so our attorney, actually two attorneys on our board, and I met with him, and you know, it was a lot of double talk and saying, well, we're just providing a service to our customers and our users, and I don't see them backing down without more pressure, quite frankly. The Mr. Harold, the president, is, you know, he's a liberal activist and has been for a long time. And so I was, you know, GuideStar really seems to have decided that it's going to completely sign up for the SPLC's jihad against conservative groups, even though they're saying, well, look, we're not political. We're just putting the information out there. It's really kind of insincere the way they're doing it.
You know, Jacob Harold, the Daily Signal has an excellent article on this morning, Mark. I'm sure you saw it. And it traces Jacob Harold's sort of past history in terms of his work. He's described as a social change strategist. Of course, he did participate in the Women's March, and that was pretty egregious to most of us. Embarrassing. Can't even describe it and use words that I can speak about on the air on this radio station. He also has been involved in the environment, radical environmental movement. He must be new, I'm thinking, to GuideStar. Do you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I actually didn't look up when he came there. My sense is he's relatively new, but I didn't. I don't know when he started there.
All right. Well, there's a letter that's gone out to him from 46. There are 46 new organizations listed by GuideStar as hate groups. A Center for Immigration Studies is one of them. And trust me, they are not a hate group. Mark is one of the finest men I know in Washington. They do some great work. FRC, do I need to explain? The American Family Association. So it's GuideStar that needs to be targeted. And they've been sent a letter signed by lots of really great people, including Matt Staver, Ed Meese, David Barton, and I could go on, General Boykin, and on I could go, demanding that they do something differently. So we'll see if we can force them to do the thing that's right. Mark Kerkorian, Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about the death of Otto Warmbier, the murder of him coming back from North Korea. It's going to be interesting, so stay tuned.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Not everybody thinks so. Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. The school system there is one of the largest in the United States, and its close proximity to Washington, D.C. has made it a target for the efforts to mainstream this radical ideology. Even after the Trump administration revoked Obama's directive threatening the nation's public schools, the fight continues at the state and district level. But parents and concerned citizens can fight back. In a recent panel discussion, three different perspectives from a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney are presented. They expose the tactics used by the transgender lobbyists and explore the strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back. Discover how to implement a 5-point plan to educate, explain, engage, empower, and elect in order to combat the transgender ideology in public schools. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
We at American Family Association are committed to making a difference and keeping you informed about the things you care about. We have already been greatly successful in bringing about change for the better by providing you with important information about things like current legislation and petitions that can affect your family. Text the word MYAFA to 41411 to get involved. Every week, you'll receive text messages with all the details you need to help make a difference for the kingdom. Text MYAFA, that's all one word, to 41411.
A boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. That is a highlight of our tour of the Holy Land when we go on the boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. A special time to be on the very water where Jesus walked, where he spent time with his disciples. And you know, in fact, you're the place where Jesus was. So many sights we're going to see in the Holy Land that are just like that. We know Jesus was here. The trip is in March, March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love for you to come with us. So many places we're going to see, you've read about since you were a child. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to you in the mail, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, extension 5.
Good evening. It was during this afternoon's State Department press briefing that President Trump tweeted out what could prove to be a major shift in the U.S. approach to the entire complex of problems presented by North Korea. Quote, "While I greatly appreciate the efforts of President Xi and China to help with North Korea," the president said, "it has not worked out. At least I know China tried." The tweet comes, of course, following the death yesterday of Otto Warmbier. The 22-year-old Ohio native was held hostage by the regime in Pyongyang for 17 months, returned to U.S. soil last week in a comatose state. "Let us state the facts plainly," said Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona, a former prisoner of war himself. Otto Warmbier, an American citizen, was murdered by the Kim Jong-un regime. In the final year of his life, McCain added, he lived the nightmare in which the North Korean people have been trapped for 70 years, forced labor, mass starvation, systematic cruelty, torture, and murder. And does this administration agree with that statement?
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on what Senator McCain said. I'm familiar with what he said, but I'm just not going to characterize that. We just can't comment on the circumstances of his death right now, but we remain committed, and the Secretary remains very committed to hold North Korea accountable for his death.
The White House said today President Trump was deeply troubled by Warmbier's death and that it was now less likely Mr. Trump would meet directly with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. In remarks with his Ukrainian counterpart today, the president called what happened to Warmbier a total disgrace.
He should have been brought home that same day. The result would have been a lot different. But what happened to Otto is a disgrace. And I spoke with his family. His family is incredible what they've gone through.
Three other Americans remain captive in North Korea, and several Americans are also being held in detention in Iran.
All right, that was James Rosen of Fox. And, of course, the news is coming at us so quickly. It was just a few days ago when Otto Warmbier died. He's only been home 5 days. He was captured 17 months ago in North Korea. And, you know, there was a time that when you carried that beautiful blue American passport, it was something that kept you safe. Countries did not mess with American citizens because they knew if they did, they would to pay. You know, it makes me think of Paul in the book of Acts when he was beaten, and then he told them he was a Roman citizen, and they cowered in fear because it meant something to be a citizen. Well, that stopped under the Obama administration. So Otto really was, he really was murdered by the North Koreans, brought back to us nearly comatose, able to walk, it seems, stumble, but totally without his senses. And so that's what we want to talk about. And I've asked someone who knows a great deal about North Korea to join us today. Her name is Suzanne Schulte. She's the president of the Defense Forum Foundation. She's the chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition. She was the recipient of the Seoul Peace Prize laureate for her work on behalf of North Korea. And before I say hello to Suzanne, let me just say that I was in North Korea myself, one of the few Americans to visit. I was there on 9/11 for about two days. It's a long story. I don't want to take this segment telling you about it. But I came back and served as the first chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition. But Suzanne is the one who carried on and really got deep and did the work. She's working with defectors. She knows all about, and she's really put her life, poured herself into helping the people of North Korea. Suzanne, thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you, Sandy. I'm glad you. I was going to bring up that you were the first chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition, helped found it.
So. Yeah. But that was a joy for me. Honestly, it was, yeah. Suzanne. And then, of course, but you're the one equipped to this kind of work better than I. And I want to ask you now. Last time we talked, I know the answer was no, but I'm still going to ask. Do you know anything further about what happened to Otto Warmbier? Any inside information about his release or anything like that?
I don't, but I can tell you that I'm so familiar with these different cases, and I can only speculate on what I believe happened just based on past experience. But I don't know for certain, and I believe that his father characterized it that this is a pariah state, that's a terroristic actor in the world, and I think his father and parents certainly summed up this regime. I can certainly comment about what's happened to other prisoners that have been in similar states, but his was definitely different.
Well, before we go into the particulars of that, the one thing that you know also, I'm sure, Suzanne, you could speak firsthand. As you've worked with defectors and people who would be defectors, you brought so many of them in. I've met them. I've had the privilege of meeting with them, and it's just it's hard to explain how something that's so dreadful could be so rewarding. I guess it's because of God's work. It's God's work that we have seen in North Korea that's just almost inexplicable. But you have seen on the political front how President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry has handled these cases in general. How would you describe that?
Well, I don't think they did anything to really help them. If you recall, when Laura Ling and Ona Lee were in detention, you know, they were the two reporters that went to China to record the selling of North Korean women. They had filmed the trafficking markets where women were being sold. The report on this atrocious action that's continuing even today. And what happened to them, they got close to the border, they ended up in Pyongyang, and then Bill Clinton went to get them out. But they were very well connected. You know, they worked for Al Gore's television program. But remember that there was no action on their case either until Mary Ling, the mother of Laura Ling, went on Good Morning America. And this is what happened with Otto. There wasn't any action. That the State Department would say, it's better if you don't say anything. Well, I've always been against that. I always think you go public and you tell people the truth about what's going on to bring to bear pressure on our government to do something. And it's appalling that this man was not released a year and a half ago. He never should have been detained, and we should have done more to get him. We should never have allowed him to be kept by that regime, ever.
No, you know, because it was very public what his crime was. I think they even had a video of it. He took a poster down in a hallway, like a clueless American kid who's grown up playing video games and has no idea where he is and what he's dealing with, takes a poster, doesn't realize. That was his crime. And so I'm with you. Sometimes, Suzanne, when people are detained, you don't exactly know what they've done, and it's always murky. This was not murky. And so there's just no excuse. Well, let's talk about, as you mentioned, you and as I've mentioned, you have brought people to this country who have been in these camps. And I guess, Suzanne, we'd have to say that this kind of dreadful torture, treatment of people is the norm in North Korea. Can you describe that in a way we can understand
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. And let me comment about some of the previous prisoners as examples. Robert Park, who was a dear friend of mine, who I knew before he went to North Korea and after. And I'm convinced that we know for certain he was brutally tortured. He was there for 43 days. And I actually took him to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist confirmed that this man has been horribly tortured. I believe the same thing happened to Otto, and that they kept him, that he fell into that coma a year and a half ago because of that torture, and they kept him long enough so that what would have been the beatings and the bruises and the atrocious thing they did to him were not revealable at this point in time. But I think the thing that shocks us most about Otto is the fact that all these other people that have been, the Americans that have been in jail in North Korea, been detained in North Korea, all of them knew the reality of the regime. I mean, you look at Robert Park, he was actually calling for the end of the human rights violations. You look at Laura Ling and Anna Lee, they were trying to report about the horrible things that were happening to North Korean refugees. Kenneth Bay had been working in North Korea for years successfully before he was kept prisoner. But what sets Otto apart is that this is, to me, someone who was purely innocent. I mean, just a naive, joyful, young college kid who was just, you know, going because he just loved the world and was excited about life and thought, what an adventure. And this is what, to me, what is so painful, and I'm having trouble processing what this family is going through. But this is what, to me, represents what happens when pure innocence and curiosity and the kind of American spirit comes in direct conflict with pure evil. And this is an evil regime that, as you asked me about, Sandy, incarcerates its own people in brutal political prison camps where tens of thousands, I think 150,000 at least, are incarcerated, men, women, and children. What they do is if one member is accused of a crime in the family, they incarcerate three generations of the family to wipe out any opposition to the regime. But the kinds of crimes, it's listening to a foreign radio broadcast, complaining about the food situation. And in the case of so many of the women, they've enlarged the political prison camps for women because it's the women that are crossing the border to get food to save their families from starvation that are really the largest number of those that are in these prisons. It's just a horrific place. And people are worked to death in these camps. They're given very unsanitary conditions, hardly any food, just enough to sustain them. Most people die in these camps. And it's just a horrible, horrible situation.
You know, Suzanne, when of course, when I was in North Korea, we didn't do any interviews. That would be way too dangerous. And we had two watchers. You don't just have one. We had two people watching us all the time. So you just didn't go out and talk to people, and you wouldn't put them in that kind of danger. But we did interviews with people in northern Manchuria, right across the Tumon River, because North Koreans were escaping in the Tumon River, swimming to get food. And then there would be Christians primarily on the shores who were at great risk themselves, because this is illegal in China, to give them rice and also then to talk to them about Jesus and to give them Bibles. It was the most incredible place. And I the men in our, there were only six of us. So three of the men, there were two women and four men. The men went into, there were people hiding in the caves. So the men went to the caves and did interviews. We went inside a home, it's hard to explain, in a little village close to the Tumon River. And I remember it was very frightening because we actually ended up doing this in the daytime, and everyone noticed us. You know, in China, not every area is used to Westerners. So we stood out like a sore thumb, and we had a cab driver that didn't speak English. And so it was pretty scary for us, too. We didn't even know if he'd actually take us to where we thought we were going to go, and how would we know? But he did. We ended up having to walk across a chain gang, of all things. There was a chain gang doing hard labor. And we walked across and went up to the top of this apartment building, and the people let us in, but they were scared to death. They were hiding five North Koreans in their apartment. And after we got inside, the doorbell rang. And honestly, Suzanne, the horror, the fright of them, as they thought, you know, we put them at great risk, really, by going there.
Right.
And so it turned out it was not the doorbell. After several minutes of just breaking out in cold sweat, it turned out to be somebody that they knew. And we, in that setting, at least one of them, that's where we interviewed people who had escaped. And I would take the whole show to tell you what I saw. I saw a 26-year-old woman whose legs were mangled. She had jumped out of the top of her prison cell. She was on the third floor of the prison and jumped out to kill herself because she was afraid her family would be killed if she didn't just end it all. I saw a little girl, 12 years old, who, you know the face of trauma, Suzanne, that that face that cannot express anything, just has this furrowed brow and is like in shock. I saw that so often. It marked me for life, and I know that's what you've seen. So knowing that, I want to ask you, before we don't have much time, the good news is that things are happening in North Korea. You have to tell us that before we run out of time. What's
okay,
God doing
really
there?
Quickly, I'll tell you this. The North Korea of the past, the North Korea has changed so much. The people are so much better informed about what's happening in the outside world. They are they've created a market system. That's why they're surviving capitalism in these markets. And this is all because of the people of North Korea. One of the things that we're very much involved in is with the defectors that have escaped. And we're doing radio broadcasting and balloon launches. And I just wanted to tell you, I share with you, I wrote an op-ed that's in the Daily Caller website about Otto Warmbier. And one of the North Korean defectors that's here in the United States wrote me that how much she loved the op-ed because she said she wants people to understand about Americans to understand the cruelty of this regime, and she wishes that every North Korean could know what happened, because they don't know. They probably know nothing. But more and more information is getting in, and we're actually going to broadcast on Free North Korea Radio about Otto and about his story and about how Americans, because of his death, are understanding better the absolute cruelty of this regime. And this is one thing that we've got to remember, to honor Otto and that spirit of adventure and youthfulness and trust and love of humanity, which is what he was all about, to remember that there are people suffering under that same cruel system that killed him today that we have to reach out to and help. And that's one of the things we're very much involved in. And Sandy, I got to tell you one thing real quick. We have reported from the gospel programming we do into North Korea.
Yeah.
Two miraculous healings of mothers praying gospel, Bible verses they heard on our gospel program over their children. Two completely separate incidences. And these would be mothers that were raised to worship the dictatorship and not know the one true God, who trusted these Bible verses and saw a miracle in the miraculous healing of their children. So it's the word's getting through, and that's what we really need to work. We need to work with the defectors, and we need to get information in there, because people in North Korea are understanding the truth more and more every day.
You know, it's funny, Susan, because for so many years we've lobbied for our Congress to do something about this, and they can never seem to bring themselves to do something based on human rights. It's always economic considerations. And you're right, this whole business with Otto has really brought to a head how horrible the regime is, and how, if there's anything we can do, we should do it. One last thing. How could people help you with the radio broadcast?
Well, if you go to our website, it's www.defenseforum, F-O-R-U-M, Defense Forum Foundation. The Defense Forum Foundation is a nonprofit, and we are covering every month the shortwave transmission of Free North Korea Radio.
All right. We're running out of time. Defense Forum Foundation, and that's where you can find it. I encourage you to be generous, because that money is spent very well. Suzanne Schulte, thank you so much.
Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.